Good evening. On behalf of the Michigan Association of Superintendents and Administrators and the Michigan Association of School Boards, welcome to East Lansing and thank you for your participation in this evening's forum. Tonight we have with us the State Board of Education candidates from the two major parties. I'd like to welcome on stage Judy Pritchett, Tammy Carlone, and Tiffany Tilly. In addition to our guests assembled here this evening, we're also broadcasting live stream to several locations around the state for superintendents and school board members gathered for their regional meetings. To our remote audience, thank you for tuning in. Sorry you couldn't be here with us. We will also send a recording of this out to our collective memberships later this week so that everyone get a chance to hear what the candidates have to say. Tonight we will hear from each candidate on a range of issues using questions that have been submitted from our members across the state and crowdsourced.
For opening statements, each candidate will have 2 minutes. We will have a green timekeeper as well as a red and a green panel. The red panel indicates 15 seconds remaining. The red panel indicates your time is up. Please take this time to introduce yourself and give the audience a chance to get to know you. We will start on the left with Tammy Carlone.
Your left.
My left.
Hi, everybody. I am Tammy Carlone, as you said. I'm very happy to be here today to tell you what I bring to the table. I am a CPA, and I am a process improvement expert. I have a bachelor's in business administration with a major in accounting from the University of Michigan. I own my own business, and what I do is I go into large corporations, and my goal is to make them more efficient and more effective. I've saved many companies millions of dollars and implemented large computer systems. I've been an education advocate daily for 18 years, and I have a very strong passion for education. I'm an active member of Truth in American Education. It's a national network of education experts. We keep our fingers on the pulse of our nation's schools and share best practices every single day. I'm on the Michigan Board of U.S. Parents Involved in Education. I wrote HB 4192 to get Michigan out of Common Core and the related testing, and to give Michigan students the proven best. This was submitted 2 years ago. It's still sitting in Lansing. I have successfully educated people of all ages, income, and ability levels, and I have special training in educating gifted children. My two children are currently honor students at the University of Michigan. I work very hard on their education, supplementing their Northville Public Schools education evenings, weekends, and especially in the summers. I've tutored at-risk students in Detroit, and I grew up in Flint, where I attended public schools. I know what it takes to come out of a less-than-great situation in Flint, in my situation, how to get a great education, and how to become a prosperous and productive citizen. I want to offer that for all children. Thank you.
Judy?
Thank you. I am Judy Pritchett. And I come to you this evening with over 25 years of experience in public education. I have served as a teacher, a building administrator, a central office administrator, a superintendent, and prior to my retirement, chief academic officer at the Macomb Intermediate School District. During those years in public education, I was able to observe and learn from my colleagues. What I can bring to the state board table is my experiences and the realization that when policies and regulations are discussed and when decisions are made, I will be able to understand and empathize and talk about how that might impact local teachers, local districts, local buildings, local boards of education. A little bit about me. I do have 4 degrees, all from Oakland University, a bachelor's, a master's, an ed specialist, and my PhD in educational leadership. I am married. I have 2 grown children who graduated from Michigan Public Schools and 2 wonderful granddaughters who are currently attending Michigan Public Schools. My husband, who's retired from General Motors, and I live in Macomb County. My passion for education is deep. I believe strongly in the words that were said by Thomas Jefferson years ago, that in order for democracy to survive, we must have an informed electorate. That is what I bring to the table, my passion for public education, my passion to make sure that all children are treated equally when they enter the schoolhouse. Thank you.
And Tiffany.
Good evening. Thank you so much for having me. I am so happy to be here tonight and get this opportunity. Again, my name is Tiffany Tilley. I'm running for the State Board of Education. I am a mom of two children, 19 and 23. I'm the corresponding secretary and political director of the 14th Congressional District. I am the corresponding secretary of the Southfield Lathrop Village Dems Club. I have a background in education. I taught at Wayne State University in the SEMA program, which is a K-12 STEM program that was sponsored by NASA. SEMA stands for Science, Engineering, Math, and Aerospace Academy. In undergrad, I taught as a substitute teacher in three counties, Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb, in over 15 schools. I have an MBA from U of D. I studied abroad in different countries. I have a background in real estate development, and I have a license as a realtor. In real estate development, I represented the largest affordable houser here in Michigan, and I was able to help $9.9 million go into Oakland County to renovate some low-income communities. And I thought all of the great things that I've been able to do without being an elected official and all of the things that I can bring to the table to help our children. I got a chance to see a lot of the things that our babies are going through day in and day out in the classroom. And so I want to be a source and a resource to help them get to the next level in their lives and change education in Michigan. We went from being the top 10 to the bottom 10. And we need strong voices in Lansing so that we can get back to the top. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll move on to candidate questions. Each candidate will be given 60 seconds to answer the questions following. We selected our candidate order through a random selection process in the Hogwarts tradition, and we have selected Ms. Carlone to go first. Ms. Carlone?
For your first question, why are you seeking a seat on the State Board of Education, and what do you hope to accomplish if you win in November?
Thank you. Yes, I've watched education results in our state slide for 18 years. I don't need to give statistics. Everybody in this room, I'm sure, is very familiar. I am very passionate about making Michigan a powerhouse for education in our nation, the state other states look to as the example. That includes providing a great education for all children, including special education students. Meeting each child where they're at, using proven effective educational methods, not a one-size-fits-all approach to education. Why do I want truth and excellence in education for all students? Because education has a dramatic effect on the life of each and every person, and because our future as a nation depends on what is happening in our classrooms. I want to make the State Board of Education more relevant. I want accountability for education policy decision makers. I want education spending to have a direct and positive impact on learning in the classroom. Thank you.
Thank you. I am seeking a position on the State Board of Education in part to give back to my community, to the community of the state of Michigan. As I indicated before, throughout my years of working at various levels and working in both small and large districts, I've become very aware of the needs of our districts and, in particular, of our students. I do believe that public education is the great equalizer. I am passionate about that, and I am very concerned that the state of Michigan may be going down a road where public education is being undermined. And so because of that, I believe I can bring the knowledge and the passion to the State Board of Education to make sure that we keep our public schools in our community where they belong.
Tilly.
Because because our children deserve more than what politicians have been giving them. I have been an activist for almost 20 years, and one of the first things that I fought for as an AmeriCorps VISTA volunteer was education. We need a voice up in Lansing that's going to fight to increase funding for public education and make it equitable. We need someone who's going to fight for literacy and say that it is the fundamental right of all of our children to be able to read. We need to fight to close the achievement gap. There are so many things that we need to fight for. We need to fight for disability rights and make sure that they have the funding and the resources that they need in the classroom. So I want to be that fighter, and that's why I'm running.
Thank you. We'll start. We're going to move from now. We'll go on to Judy. Judy, what do you think the role of the State Board of Education is in general, and do you think this position should be elected or appointed?
I'm going to answer the second question first. I definitely believe it should be elected. State Board of Education needs to be accountable to the citizens of Michigan, and that isn't possible through an appointed position. If you read the Constitution, the State Board of Education is responsible for the general supervision of K-12 education. But within that, I believe that the State Board needs to be the voice of the students for the state of Michigan, and in particular needs to be that bully pulpit to be able to interact with legislators, with policymakers, with special interest groups, to make them understand that our number one priority has to be the equal education for all students in the state of Michigan. So that is the primary function of a board member.
Ms. Carlone, what do you think the role of the State Board of Education is in general, and do you think this position should be elected or appointed?
The role of the State Board of Education is a constitutional one, and I feel much of their potential has been left untapped. The board is responsible for overseeing education in our state while respecting our laws, local control, local boards, parental rights, students, teachers, administrators, and college boards. They are to work to make sure that education in our state provides our students the best possible. I've written a lot more, but I want to get to addressing whether it should be an elected body or not. I feel very strongly that the members should be elected by the citizens of our state. We are servant leaders serving the citizens of our state. The students we are educating belong to the citizens of our state, and the money that we are spending comes from the citizens of our state. Our schools provide a service so parents can fulfill their responsibility to properly educate their children. Citizens, therefore, must have a say in what decisions in running the schools. The swings that would happen in the other situation in our schools would not be acceptable or helpful to the students.
Thank you. Ms. Tilley, what do you think the role of the State Board of Education is in general, and do you think this position should be elected or appointed?
One of the biggest things that the board is going to do is hire the superintendent. The board was stripped of power from Engler. I think that the power needs to be restored. I think the board should have more influence on policy and the legislation that's being put forth and funding. I believe that the board should remain elected. The governor would be the person to appoint the board, and that would change every time the governor changed. So we would flip-flop on a dime. And so I believe for stability, consistency, continuity, that the board should remain elected.
Thank you. Ms. Tilley, we're going to start this next question with you. What do you think the current perception is of the Michigan Department of Education out in the school district?
I think that's going to vary depending on the district that you're in. I think it's respected. I think a lot of the districts want to keep localized control, and from some of the conversations I've had, that they kind of fear that that's going to change, or that could possibly change. I know that some people appreciate the partnership that was in the partnership agreements that took place instead of schools closing, them working with the communities and working with the schools to keep the schools open.
Ms. Carlone, what do you think the current perception is of the Michigan Department of Education out in the school districts today?
Of course, you can never speak for anybody about anything, but generally speaking, I would say that teachers would very much appreciate my plan for teacher autonomy and my platform points about returning local control. Please see my Facebook page, Tammy for Ed, T-A-M-I, the number 4-E-D, very long and detailed. There's give and take required from each side for this to happen, but teachers do not go to school to be under the thumb of the government and to constantly be going through different changes depending on what direction the government is telling them to go in at any given time. They go to school so they can be experts in the classroom to educate children and to be held accountable for things that they have no control over, I'm sure, is constantly a source of frustration for them. Thank you.
And Ms. Pritchett, what do you think the current perception is of the Michigan Department of Education out in our school districts?
I believe the current perception is mixed. There are some school districts that believe that MDE is a compliance organization, that they are just there to handle reports and compliance. There are other districts that rely very heavily on MDE, their consultants and their departments to assist them when they have run into difficulties or they need some assistance. I think MDE's overall reflection in districts is they are a helpful institution, department that is there to assist districts, again, depending on what particular situation they happen to be in at that point. I am a strong supporter of the partnership district model that is currently in place and have had personal experience with that.
Dr. Zeile, welcome.
Zeile,
Dr. Zeile, thank you for coming. We're going to start with this one for you. One of the first tasks the new Board of Education will face is the hiring of a state superintendent. What qualities are you looking for in the next state superintendent?
Very good. First of all, my name is Zeile. When it's German, so when two vowels go walking, the second one does the talking. And I apologize for being late here. I was tied up in not one but two jams in Detroit on my way here. For a new state superintendent, I participated in the selection process that ended up with Brian Whiston, an outstanding choice, very effective administrator. I'm looking for someone who has acquaintance with Michigan's situation and the various needs of our communities. And I'm looking for someone who has lived with the changes that he or she has instituted. We have a dysfunctional culture of celebrity where someone comes in, makes a lot of changes, and goes off to the next challenge. Someone else has to clean up the mess.
Thank you. Ms. Tilley, one of the first tasks the new State Board of Education will face is the hiring of a state superintendent. What qualities are you looking for in the next state superintendent?
Someone who is experienced, who has a history of being able to restructure and revitalize school districts, someone who is community-oriented and willing to get to know the people he or she will serve, someone who can be a bridge and bring together the various stakeholders involved in public education.
Dr. Pritchett, one of the first tasks the new State Board of Education will face is the hiring of a state superintendent. What qualities are you looking for in the next state superintendent?
We need to find an individual first who has had leadership experience in public schools. We need an individual who has worked with groups of people with diverse views. We need an individual who has the ability to work with policymakers on both sides of the aisle. We need an individual who is an instructional leader, who understands instruction, and who is ready to help lead the Michigan Department of Education in that direction to continue to build on the base that Brian Whiston had begun before on his untimely death. We need a leader who is committed to all students, no matter, again, who they are or what they bring to the schoolhouse door, and have an understanding of that and some experience with that.
Colin, same question. One of the first tasks the new State Board of Education will face is the hiring of a state superintendent. What qualities are you looking for in the next state superintendent?
Yeah, thank you. I would look for qualities that go along with desire and ability to accomplish the goals in my platform, which you can see on TammyCarlone.com. I would look for professionalism, intelligence, emotional intelligence, wisdom, and great leadership. A hard worker that is ethical and that puts the best interests of students first, as I do. A person that has a heart for all children and is not politically driven. The ability and willingness to get rid of ineffective staff. We must get education right. It has a huge impact on the lives of the students. I would like him also, or her also, to treat spending as if it's their own money.
Thank you. Ms. Carlone, we're going to start with the next question with you. State Board of Education is a bipartisan governing body, but we all know education has no party affiliation. How do you plan on minimizing the politics between Republicans and Democrats on the state board?
I love this question. Thank you. I've said it all over the state for several months now, and I'm happy to say it again. Politics is a huge part of the problem in education. I am probably the only one here that has worked for 18 years to stop the politicization of education. I have seen its ill effects, and it will not serve us well. Politics is part of what is keeping us from providing truth and excellence in education for all children. I will work with anybody that has my same goal of providing all Michigan students with an excellent education. I don't care what party you are, what sex you are, what color you are, or anything. I only care about providing each and every student in Michigan an excellent education. It is what drives me to run for this role. What happens in our classrooms determines the future of our state and nation. As a daughter of the American Revolution with seven relatives that served, and a person that loves all children in my country, it is a passion for me that breaks all barriers. Thank you.
Dr. Pritchett, same question. How do you plan on minimizing the politics between Republicans and Democrats on the state board?
I believe now more than ever we need to drop those labels, especially when it deals with education. I only have one goal, and that is making certain that every child in the state of Michigan is treated equitably and receives all the opportunities that they deserve. I'm a collaborative person. I'm willing to sit down with anyone as long as they come to the table with evidence-based information that they have researched, that we can reach a common goal as long as it is going to benefit the students here in Michigan, then I'm ready, willing, and able to do that.
Ms. Tilley, how do you plan on minimizing the politics between Republicans and Democrats on the state board?
When it comes to our children, I hope that everyone on the board is willing to care more about their welfare than politics, more about our teachers and staff and them having the resources they need versus which party asked for them. A lot of the issues are nonpartisan, things like clean water in our schools, having up-to-date curriculum, having programs that service the child and the family, higher literacy rates, safer schools. Those are some things I think that everyone could and should agree on. And like Judy said, I'm willing to work with anyone to make those things happen.
Thank you. And Dr. Ziley, how do you plan on minimizing the politics between Republicans and Democrats on the state board?
Well, when I was first elected to the board, we agreed that we would not be partisan, but I said, but I believe that that doesn't mean that we are not principled. Now, politics arises from conflicting agendas. And if we want to raise literacy, then we're going to have to make some hard decisions as to how we do that. And the devil is in the details. Beware of glittering generalities. Affirmation of values that we already hold without any specific idea or suggestion as to how we're going to achieve these goals. Now, I was elected co-president of the state board by both Democrats and Republicans in 2016, and I was so apolitical that my opposition also consisted of Democrats and Republicans. And if you study the conflicted votes we've had on the board in the last 2 years, you will find that we have not generally broken down by party lines, but usually by other philosophical lines.
For the next question, we'll start with Dr. Pritchett. Dr. Pritchett, if elected, how will you advocate for public education in your interactions with the state legislature?
I have had a lot of experience with members of the state legislature. I have testified in front of committees and have been called upon by legislators to assist with policy. I have written policy, helped to interpret policy. So I'm very comfortable in that role and am looking forward to that as we begin to review current policy in place and looking at where we can go in the future.
Thank you. Ms. Carlone, if elected, how will you advocate for public education in your interactions with the state legislature?
Part of my platform includes nailing down the power and accountability structure of education in the state of Michigan, getting it where it needs to be, and doing a public education on the matter so we all know exactly where the buck stops. As a businesswoman, having too many hands in the education policy-making cookie jar and nobody held accountable is not how education in our state will improve. We all must be clear on who is responsible for what, and we must hold them responsible. The State Board of Education needs to step up to the plate, and they need to become very relevant and effective. Otherwise, the legislature and others will continue to steamroll their constitutional authority. It is essential that this elected board get it right. As I keep saying, education is way too important, affecting the lives of our children, as well as the state and the nation. I will seek to reduce legislative impositions. Even recent grant programs are designed to impose someone else's ideas to improve education, not the local teachers and not the State Board of Education. Thank you.
Dr. Ziley, if elected, re-elected, how will you advocate for public education in your interactions with the state legislature?
I will clarify the choices that we have to make. A good example is that 2 years ago, about 45 schools were identified as persistently failing for 3 years in a row. We had the hard decision, is improving or helping or supporting public education closing those persistently low-performing schools, or is it to keep them open? Here's a case of where I felt that most of them should have been closed. Instead, the majority of the board and the Department of Education decided instead that they would assist those schools, and some of them have made significant improvement, but not all. So that's a good example of the hard decision. The devil is in the details. I believe that education is in the public interest, and whichever way we promote it is promoting public education.
Ms. Tilley, if elected, how will you advocate for public education in your interactions with the state legislature?
I'm willing to work both sides of the aisle. I have experience lobbying in D.C. and in Lansing. It's important to knock on doors, on everybody's doors, bringing additional research and information. And then also, I would like to host opportunities for them to visit some of the schools and see what's going on in the school district firsthand.
Thank you. Ms. Tilley, we're going to start with you for this next question. What do you believe needs to be done to make Michigan a so-called top 10 in 10 state for education?
Increase funding and make it equitable. Strengthen early childhood programs. We need to understand that every child has a fundamental right to read, and we should work together to do everything we can to make that happen. We have to respect our educators. We need policies based on research and facts, and not just political ideologies.
Thank you. Ms. Carlone, what do you believe needs to be done to make Michigan a so-called top 10 in 10 state in education?
Thank you. We must put the best interests of the students first in all of our decision-making. We must have truth and excellence in education for all students. In addition to that, my platform includes, some of these are repeated, but it bears saying, making Michigan an academic powerhouse using proven effective educational methods, getting Michigan out of the failed experiments Common Core, implementing quality phonics instruction for every child in every grade until every child can read, stopping the teach-to-the-test mentality that is killing our children's love of learning, and I believe our teachers' love of teaching, making sure teacher college curriculum covers critical knowledge so the students get the best, implementing an accountability structure for education policy decision makers, demanding academic and intellectual integrity in education. We are suffering from a lot of groupthink in education, returning local control and parental rights, and finally making sure every education dollar has a direct and positive impact on classroom learning.
Dr. Zile, what do you believe needs to be done in Michigan to make it a make so-called top 10 in 10 states?
Well, the board has done what is necessary already. You see, during the time that Michigan students supposedly fell behind those of other states, the other states had changed their kindergarten entry age from December 1st to September 1st, and in some cases to August 1st. So Michigan children were beginning their education 5% lower, younger than the other students that they were being compared to. When we had 25 organizations, advocacy groups, et cetera, talk to the board 2 years ago about what we could do to close the gap, most of them were not aware of the discrepancy between our kindergarten entry age and that of the other states. This suggests to me that we need to pay closer attention to the facts and not be distracted by media circuses such as the Free Press circus on charter schools about 3 years ago. So we need to pay attention to business and ignore some of the stuff that goes on in the media, which is a distraction.
Dr. Pritchett, what do you believe needs to be done in Michigan to make it a so-called 10 and 10 state in education?
I think we need to be laser focused on improving academic achievement. And that starts with supporting our teachers and our educational staff in each of our buildings. We need additional resources. We need to invest in early childhood education. We need to make sure that teachers are supported, that we have high standards for every child who walks through the door, and that we have highly qualified, well-respected teachers in all of our classrooms, again, with the resources that they need in order to make sure that all of our students are successful. That has to be the only focus at this point. This isn't a program. It isn't a magic answer. It's going to take time. It's going to take individual plans for each child. And while that sounds overwhelming, it can be done. We need to stop going in 15 different directions and get focused on achievement. Thank you.
Ms. Cologne, I think that leads us to you. Do you believe there are any weaknesses in Michigan's laws related to charter schools? If so, what are they?
I think charter boards need to be accountable to the enrolled parents. Most are appointed by their owner of the charter and are accountable to them. This is in comparison to our elected local boards, of course. I believe their advocacy for more money is inappropriate and disingenuous. They were founded with a clear set of funding rules, which they accepted. I do believe they should be given more flexibility on curriculum for those that demand choice. For there to be real choice, there must be more of a choice than what building they're going to drive their children to each day. I do not believe it is right to stop classical education in charter schools, especially since there is such a high demand and that it is proven effective. Our number one goal must be to successfully educate every child. We must use what works.
Ms. Tilley, this question is for you. Do you believe there are any weaknesses in Michigan's laws related to charter schools? If so, what are they?
Yes, charter schools were never intended to be their own system. And they're competing with the public system, and they're taking money away from the public system. If you have five schools in one neighborhood, you don't have strong schools. If you have one strong school in the neighborhood, that's what works. I believe that charter schools need more regulation. There should be a cap on the charter schools. They're just allowed right now to pop up where they want, when they want. So we need to have caps on them, and they need to be, the administrators need to be more transparent.
Dr. Pritchett, the question is for you. Do you believe there are any weaknesses in Michigan's laws related to charter schools? If so, what are they?
Yes, I do believe there's weaknesses. And it has already been indicated by Ms. Tilley, just the opening and closing of charter schools. There's no regulation with that. We just had an example the last couple of weeks of a charter school in Detroit. The students and parents were given less than a week's notice that they were going to close. That's unacceptable. The other area that there should be major concern about for every taxpayer in the state of Michigan is that we have management companies managing charter schools who do not have to show the public their budgets or their books. We have no idea what kind of profit margins they're making at this point. Those are our tax dollars at work. We have a right to know that. More and more people are beginning to speak about and talk about the fact that Michigan's charter laws need to be tightened up, and I fully support that at this point.
Dr. Zile, this question is for you. Do you believe there are any weaknesses in Michigan's laws related to charter schools? If so, what are they?
Well, I have a little more background and experience having helped organize the Old Redford Academy in Northwest Detroit, the charter school that received the MEAP Award for its, our Golden Apple Award for its MEAP scores, and served as president of Woodward Academy in Detroit during its reorganization. Yes, regulations need to be tightened up. A good example is cyber schools. We expect our schools to provide instruction and supervision. Cyber schools only provide instruction, therefore, the tuition reimbursement should reflect this. It has been observed that it costs less to educate elementary students than high school students. That's why most charter schools are elementary grades and you have fewer high school. The tuition funding probably needs to be tinkered with. But the greatest mistake with charter schools is that we have applied the same regulations to them as to traditional public schools, therefore not allowing them to specialize in a philosophical approach or in curricular approaches. Algebra 2 is a great requirement for a traditional public school preparing kids for engineering. But my daughter went to a school for fine and performing arts to study violin. If you're studying world languages, then Algebra 2 may keep you from taking conversational Chinese. So we need to, correct some of our regulations to allow the individualism of charter schools to come out. Thank you.
Dr. Pritchett, we'll begin this question with you. What are your beliefs on the current practice of the legislature's use of the school aid fund for community colleges and university expenditures?
Practice needs to end. I have to commend the Michigan League of Public Policy. They did somewhat of a history lesson on this practice a few weeks ago. It is a report well written, and they estimate that currently $614 per student is being moved from school aid over to colleges and universities. Our school districts are currently needing money, and to have that money moved. It began in 2009. For some reason, it needs to end now. Michigan citizens expect the money to stay in school aid to educate K-12 students, not to be moved to colleges and universities.
Thank you. Dr. Zile, same question. What are your beliefs on the current practice of the use of the legislature's use of school aid funds for community colleges and universities' expenditures?
This issue is a good example of playing politics with school funding. You see, our children are being funded on a per pupil basis more now than ever before. But some people are complaining that some money is being given to colleges, which also presumably need the money, which also are part of public education. And so to stir up this turf war is a good example of the counterproductive debates that we have in education. We have plenty of funding for most of our school districts. The problem is less in the amount, which I say is higher than it's ever been before, and much more in how it's spent. That's the difficulty. The devil is in the details. How do we make use of the resources we have, not merely calling for more resources?
Thank you. Ms. Tilley, same question. What are your beliefs on the current practice of the legislature's use of the school aid fund to fund community colleges and universities?
You know, in 2009, I think Grant Holmes' solution to balance the budget was to take some of the money from the school aid fund and give it to the colleges and universities. However, I think that should have been a temporary fix. And I think that we should go back to funding them with the general fund, because we don't want to see our colleges and universities hurt at all, but we don't want our schools to suffer like they've been suffering. We wouldn't be – there's some major issues. We wouldn't be in the bottom 10 if there weren't. So I think fund our schools, our K through 12 with the school aid fund, and fund our colleges and universities with the general fund.
Thank you. And Ms. Carlone, same question. What are your beliefs on the current practice of the legislature's use of the school aid fund for universities and community college expenditures?
I believe higher education is a business and it should be treated as such. Taxpayer funding is an inappropriate use of the funds. Universities have more than enough money as well as alternate funding sources. They have so much money that they've opened many unnecessary departments. I do not appreciate the inequity they splurge on certain groups and not others. They should be pressured to reduce their costs, and they should not be eligible for school aid fund monies. Community colleges should work in partnership with their local public high schools. School aid fund money in that case should only be given as part of the per pupil enrollment for high school students who are using their services. Community colleges provide services to other people, people not eligible to enroll in public high school. That funding source should be separate and not taxpayer supported.
Our final question, we're going to start with Dr. Zeile. One of the major challenges we face is determining the cost of an education. How much do you know about the School Funding Research Collaborative, and can you support its findings?
Well, the board has had a number of studies, including one they generated themselves. I just came across it yesterday. And most of them are based on somewhat questionable or at least assumptions that can be challenged. Part of the problem is that you are talking about an average. The answer you get in these studies is something like this, analogous to saying that the average family has 2.4 children. Well, no family has 0.4 children. Say they either have two or they have two or less or three or more. And so the answer that you come up with is by its nature inapplicable and based on a number of factors. The real truth is that some students cost a whole lot more to educate than other students. And, you know, the special education student and the one that's going to be a physician, they both cost a lot of money and more than other students. I think we have to come to grips with the diversity rather than the kinds of questionable generalizations that these studies come up with. Thank you.
Ms. Tilley, as we said, one of the major challenges we face is determining the cost of an education. How much do you know about the School Funding Research Collaborative findings, and can you support those findings?
I do support their findings. I think the research that was done was very in-depth, and they found that we're not adequately funding public education and that it takes $9,000 plus to fund our students per pupil, and then that increases depending on different factors like special education, like if the child is in VOTEC, like if the child is low income. So those percentages increase, and I agree with that.
Thank you. Ms. Carlone, we'll go to you. One of the major challenges we face is determining the cost of an education. How much do you know about the School Funding Research Collaborative, and can you support the findings?
School funding is, of course, a question that I get asked a lot, and my answer is always we should spend whatever it takes to offer a proper education for each and every student in Michigan. That is what our job is, and every dollar that we spend to educate our young citizens will only help us as a state, of course. As a CPA, I have spent a lot of time reviewing the state of Michigan budget, especially the education budget in our state. I'm astounded at some of the waste I see, but that's another topic for another day. I will always take all information available on all issues. It's something that I'm very used to as a process improvement expert. in regards to the study and the report. There is a lot there. Definitely, I have a ton of input. I could talk forever. One very important consideration that I would like to talk about just briefly is the assumptions. We have to talk about the assumptions that are in the report based on time is up. Thank you. I could talk forever about that topic.
Dr. Pritchett, one of the major challenges we face is determining the cost of an education. How much do you know about the School Finance Research Collaborative, and can you support the findings?
I am familiar with the report, and I believe it was very well done. It is evidence-based. They started with the premise of what would it take, how much money is it going to take to provide an adequate evidence-based education for a child here in the state of Michigan. They got feedback from a lot of people across the state, not only educators, parents, business people. They took their time. They based it on other reports that they had done in other states, and I believe have come up with some excellent recommendations for the state of Michigan to now use as they move forward in looking at the way we fund public education here in the state.
Thank you. This concludes the question portion of our program. Now we are on to closing statements. Each candidate will have an additional 2 minutes to provide a closing statement, and we will begin with Dr. Zeile.
Thank you. I was deeply honored to serve for 8 years on Michigan State Board of Education. I was deeply impressed with how often the real factors that affect the operation of our schools and of our children don't get much play in the public discussion. A good example is the questions we've been asked about funding, when the state board really has very little authority or influence over funding. We can make recommendations, we can ask, but that's generally made by the legislature, and that's often reflected by how well our taxes are going. It's very revealing to me that now that we are funding our students on a per pupil basis higher than ever, there are still people who say, oh, we're not funding our schools enough, yada, yada, yada. Now, I believe in funding schools. I believe that every automobile needs to have a full tank of gas. But if the car isn't running and you've already filled the tank, there's obviously something else that needs to be fixed about the car. So if our schools aren't performing, then there's something else we have to look at other than merely funding. And this is demonstrated by the fact that, you know, the top 20% of our schools academically are the top funded. But the next 20% of our schools that are funded, that is to say the fourth quintile, they have our lowest performing students. That means that 60% of our schools in Michigan are doing a better job academically with less funding. Now, again, good ideas, good programs deserve funding, and I support that 100%, but merely more funding is not itself a good idea. When I ran a small church in New Jersey, we had a flooded basement. The plumber came in and said, we can put in French drains for $20,000. And people said, oh, we got to spend the money because we believe in our church. Well, elder came by and he bought two by sixes, built a little diversion of the runoff from the hill next door, and that fixed the problem. You need someone who's willing to talk to other experts on the state board. Thank you.
Ms. Dilley, your closing statement, please.
Again, thank you so much for having me this evening. One of the reasons I fight so much and speak so much about fighting for against illiteracy is because I had a third grade student, and that student could not read, and her behavior was so poor because she could not read. And she decided one day, she was upset with me, to write a derogatory word on a piece of paper about me. And one of the teachers laughed and told her she couldn't even spell it. And the teacher and I talked amongst ourselves and laughed, and I said, I've talked about this baby, now I have to help her. So I asked the student if she would like me to spend time teaching her how to read. I said, I know it's her not being able to keep up in class, and she agreed. And her eyes softened up. I began taking that student and working with her on her reading in the library. And as she got more attention and more time spent and learned more about reading, her behavior began to change. And then I asked her, my daughter had come to the school a few times because she was on a different schedule, and this was Inkster. I said, would you like her clothes? She's grown out of some of her clothes, and she said yes. And so I said, let me talk to your mom. I asked her mom, was it okay if I came by and dropped off the clothes, or would she like to come pick them up? And she said she needed me to drop them off. This mother had 8 children. I dropped the clothes off, and, I mean, it just was a big change for that child. And that's what it's about, changing the lives of our children. And I think about her as I go across the state and all of the good work that I want to do for our youth, and how not only just making that change for today, but how that change can change the rest of their lives. Please vote for me, Tiffany Tilley, for State Board of Education. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Pritchett, your closing statement, please.
First of all, I would like to thank the Michigan Association of School Administrators and Michigan Association of School Boards for this opportunity this evening to share my views on public education. Hopefully, when you walk out of this forum this evening, that you'll remember one thing about me, and that is I believe that the purpose of public education is to provide equitable opportunities for all children. And when I say all children, I mean all children, no matter their zip code, no matter the color of their skin, no matter whether they have special needs, whether they speak English, whether their parents were born in this country, no matter what, that when they walk through the schoolhouse door, that they're going to be treated the same, that their teachers are going to be well respected, that their teachers are going to have the resources they need to provide the best opportunities for those children so that they can be successful. I have had the opportunity through my previous position to attend the state board meetings every month for 9 years. So I have a pretty good knowledge about how the board works, about their attempt success in being as nonpartisan as possible. I am ready for that challenge. My commitment to you this evening, to every child in the state of Michigan, to every caregiver, to every parent, is that I will research every issue that comes forward, that I will reach out to people who that particular decision may affect and listen to you and take that back to the board table, that I will bring up the fact that maybe a decision that's being made or something that's being talked about may adversely affect a teacher, a building, a district, a board of education, because it may look good at that moment, but might not be in reality the best decision. That's my commitment to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Carlone, your closing statement, please.
Thank you. A vote for me is a vote to return truth and excellence to education for all students. I am very proud to have come from the situation I was in Flint, and to now come to you with a uniquely great skill set to bring to the table for the State Board of Education. CPA process improvement expert, education advocate of 18 years, I feel it would be a great fit for the board. I also have the right passion, the right heart, the right work ethic, the right goals, and the right drive. I have been all over our great state for many months talking about my platform. It has been extremely well received. My daily education advocacy for 18 years has earned me hundreds of endorsements. The second I put my website, TammyCarlone.com, up, it grew and grew and grew, including many national education experts, state education experts, 4 of the current board members, hundreds of elected officials, but most importantly, teachers, parents, and students from both parties and diverse backgrounds. I am especially proud to have the endorsement of many special education advocates in our state. I have a long-term plan, and I would not have entered the race if I didn't have a chance of succeeding. Anybody that knows me knows that. I'm only in it to win it for the kids. If you take only one message away that I've said tonight, please let it be that I have the heart for all children, the know-how to provide them with an excellent education no matter where they come from, and the work ethic and the collaborative spirit to get the job done. Thank you.
Thank you. If we could please thank our candidates for being here this evening with one final round of applause. To the folks who joined us online, thank you for being here. The recording will be sent to you shortly after this, and we again will have this recording available on our website should you wish to disseminate it among your networks. So thank you very much again for being here on behalf of MASA and MASB. Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.